Okay, this is the last of our series, Seder Secrets. And tonight we're going to do Chol Moed, Sfirat HaOmer, and Shvi'i Shel Pesach, which is a lot in one, and a craft. So I hope it'll be worth it. We'll see. Anyway, I want to start with the New York Times article that I thought was just interesting. It's called The Stories That Bind Us by Bruce, how do you pronounce his last name, Feiler. And I'll just summarize it, but you'll find it interesting, I think, to share or to read. So he talks about what keeps families strong. And apparently, you know, it's always been a guessing game throughout the generations to know, like, what's the glue that binds us. But apparently there's been some research because of the army and different groups and bringing groups together, what keeps a group strong and provides cohesiveness to a group. And one of the things is stories. A collective story, a group narrative, something that strengthens the group, knowing where they come from and where they're going, which is, of course, what we do at the Seder, is tell that story, our group story. But he says specifically that research shows that kids who know, for instance, where their grandparents grew up, or how their family came to America, or different, like if they know stories, they seem to be more resilient. So they were starting some of this research before 9/11, apparently, and then at 9/11, they realized that they had an opportunity to test the families that they had interviewed before to see how resilient the kids were through that, because it was something that everybody experienced in their own way. So he just talks about, you know, how important it is to have the knowledge of where you come from and where you're going as a family cohesive glue, cohesion glue. So I brought the article for that. But it's an interesting thing just to think about, and the wisdom of having a Seder and sharing that, you know, sharing the stories. And so I spent time with Rabbi Yoel Unger last week, who talked about Seders. We asked him specifically to teach us more how to run a Seder, what he does at his Seders. So he's very clear on the point of the Seder is to make an impression on the children. It's for the children. You run it for the children. If you don't have children, so it's for you. But it's for the children. If you have children, it's for the kids. Make an impression on the kids. And he's done all kinds of things. Like, for instance, a couple of years ago, he hired a policeman who came during Shulchan Aruch, came about midnight, knocked on the door, 6 foot something tall, right? Comes creaking in all his leather outfit. And he says, I've been investigating a rash of thefts in the neighborhood, Rabbi. I'm just wondering if you've also been affected by this theft of the Afikoman. And so, the kids loved it, having the policeman come in and snoop around and check it out and made an impression. So every year he does something like that. Last year, I think he hired a magician. And he gave him a whole script. How to say, you know, he's one of the magicians from Egypt, and he came, but Moses' magic bested Pharaoh's magic, and he doesn't know what to do, but now he travels the earth, and he shows up at Seder's, and he does a few tricks for the children, but just to show them, like, hi, how are you?
How are you?
Good.
Oh my gosh, this was hard.
I know.
Next time we'll do it.
I think my
husband arrived from Washington, and I've never done this, and I had to leave. It was really hard not to stay.
Yeah, yeah.
Hi, how are you?
Happy to see you.
Good to see you.
Anyway, so we're just talking about the Seder, how important it is to share the story. Share the Seder story, and then he said it's also important to share stories of Jews. Share stories of your family, share stories, have your grandparents share stories, share your own stories. Why are you here? What's the point of being here? You know, why is being Jewish important to you? Or stories of holy Jews, also important. So he told the story of Rabbi Unger, with whom I learn. So he told the story of, I'm trying to remember which Rebbe, sorry, it's out of my head, some famous rabbi some Hasidic rabbi came to a home and said, I feel holy vibrations here. Hmm. What's the story? Apparently some very holy people can feel those things. He told us once a story of somebody who couldn't sleep on a bed because it was made during the 3 weeks, during that time of Tsar, and it was too uncomfortable for him to lie on it because it was made, constructed during that time. So there are people who have those sensitivities. Anyways, we came into the house and they felt it's very holy. What was the story? And so they told him. No, somebody's house in Europe. So they told him what. They were trying to think what the story was, and they found. I'll give you this one at the end. I can give it to you now. You don't need it even. They told him the story of how they're getting ready for Pesach, and they had just hired a new maid. And the house was a hustle bustle, and she was, you know, appointed to watch the children and take care of them while everybody was doing their thing. And the day progresses, and everybody's busy going, buying things, getting ready for the Seder, and, you know, running around. Not like today, where you prepare more in advance because they didn't have the refrigeration or the storage or the money that we do. So along about the afternoon, the kids are getting hungry, mm-hmm. and there's no food for them. So she hunts around, and she doesn't find anything but some crackers wrapped up in a piece of paper, which she breaks up and puts a little sugar on and puts some milk on and gives them to eat. And they eat, and they're happy, and time, you know, to set the table, and the Rebbetzin looks around for the matzahs, and she can't find them anywhere. And they turn the house upside down. Finally, the maid sees what's going on, and she comes over and she says, "Oh, are you looking for those crackers?" She says, "Yes, actually we are." So, "Well, I fed them to the children." Now, these are special matzahs, of course, that the Rebbe had made himself, and he harvested the wheat, and he ground it, just like I think they used to do with Rabbi Tversky, and he baked them himself with kavanas, thinking about what's going to be. And this is the only, eating matzah is the only mitzvah of eating that we have left today. We don't have any of the korbanot or any of those other mitzvot. Hi. Welcome.
Hi, sorry.
No problem. Hi. So it's a very special mitzvah. It's the only mitzvah of eating that we have, so you can fulfill. We say al achilat matzah. So all the kavanas that he put into those matzahs, and they went for lunch for the children. And he turned around and told his wife, "Okay, I guess we have to go buy some other matzahs." And she went and she bought matzahs, and they used whatever she could find at that time. And so the holy thing was, towards a non-Jew, to not get upset, to realize all those kavanas went to take care of her and her feeding the children. And that was the holy thing that happened in the house, that he felt the care for that person and the care for their honor and respect, that nothing was said except, "Okay, let's go buy some more matzahs."
Not to get mad.
Rabbi Abitan, our rabbi in Long Beach of blessed memory, the night of the Seder, when all the men would go to shul and it's an extra long davening, they say Hallel at night. After shul, he would tell all the men, "Now you're going to go home, and something's not going to be right. Something's going to be missing. Something's going to be awry. Somebody's not going to be dressed. Somebody's going to be late." He said, "Don't say a word. If something's not on the table, put it on the table. If something's not purchased, forget about it. If your wife needs help, give it to her. Don't say a word. She's been working for a month." He said, "You want to say something? That's your Yetzer Hara." He said, "Don't let the Yetzer Hara ruin your Yontif." Yom Tov, of course, because he was Moroccan, not Yontif. But he was very careful with that, to remind the men to be very careful.
Sorry, Rabbi Unger?
Abitan.
And the other one, who was that?
Unger. Unger.
Okay.
U-N-G-A-E-A-R.
He's from
here. Anyway, okay, so that's what the stories and sharing stories. So it's important to share stories that make Jews feel good about being Jewish and makes Jews feel like they know where they're coming from and they know where they're going to the Seder night. Share stories, yeah.
So I've got grandchildren. So I'm the grandparent. Mm-hmm. What do you think about explaining that I'm a kind of a Jew by choice, sort of? I mean, okay, so I was born Jewish, but...
I think it's very important to do that. I mean, I think it's interesting to think about. I mean, we talked about last time, you know, you have these four questions and there's no answers anywhere in the Haggadah, right? It's meant to spark a dynamic conversation. And the conversation is, why are we here? Why do we care? That's really what it's about. What are we doing? Why are we Jews? Who is God to us? Who are we to God? That's the conversation. So for sure you should be saying that. So you might just want to be your story. You might want to plan the story. You might want to make it interesting to think about their ages. You know, you might want pictures. You might want, I'll just put this idea out there. If anybody wants to run with it, I would someday really like to create a scrapbook I thought about doing is a bat mitzvah program or even an adult program called Scrapbook to Sinai. That's my idea, where you scrapbook your each page of the scrapbook would be one generation all the way back to Sinai, so that you could do your present generation and then your parents and your grandparents as far back as you can go, starting with photographs and things, and then you go back to whatever city you know where they came from. And then most Jews at that point lose their trail 4, 5, 6 generations back, but they can get to a city maybe. And then you can go to the Rav of that city or a book that was written in that city. And then you can go through them back to Sinai. You can definitely trace back so that you could see a chain of Sinai to you. I think that would be an amazing thing to share with kids over Pesach.
Yeah, I don't know how you get to Sinai.
How you get to Sinai?
I don't know the grandparents. I don't even know past.
Right, so you probably can't trace all your relatives. Very few people have that. A few people do have a scroll of generations that they can go back very, very far.
Rabbi Torsky, King David.
Yeah, there used to be a big
remember?
Timeline. Wasn't it here?
Yeah, and no, we spent a bit. Were you in that class?
Yeah, I thought that it was on this wall, but I remember seeing it here somewhere.
We had one.
It's a long time ago.
My grandfather's brother had a bookstore, a religious bookstore in Canada, and he remarried, and the woman he married didn't get along with the family. They didn't like her. They didn't treat her well. And when he died, she sold all the books, including the one that had the whole family.
No. So, yeah. So there are stories like that that are very sad. nevertheless,
the person that says very sad with it, I love your smile.
What can you say? You know, that's yeah. So, but you can definitely get back for yourself. You can go back to what I'm saying is go back to a city where you know they came from, and then do a little research. Today with the internet, you can find stuff so easily. Just look online and find somebody who is in that town and go with them.
But the Holocaust is the problem.
No, you can still find a town. You can still find a rabbi. You can still find his rabbi. You can still find his rabbi. We have records of that. So you're going to lose the trail of your family, but you won't lose the trail of the Jews. So, but you'll lose your direct trail with the Holocaust. Most people will lose, in a few generations, they'll lose their direct trail. But it doesn't mean that you can't find the city that your family came from and find somebody in that city, and you know that you can trace back that way, because your story is going to be different from a Moroccan Jew's story, even if they can't go back the direct generations. But it will converge at some point. So it would be interesting just to turn the pages and see the cities that the family went through, or how the Jews got from Sinai to Denver, Colorado. So it could even be a Chol Hamoed project that you start with grandkids and work on over the years, you know, to think about how to do a scrapbook to Sinai.
The Mormon Church actually has this huge genealogy online that you can, so I think it's mygenealogy.com or something like that. So they've already been accruing records.
They've done a ton of work. They've gone to Europe and taken tracings off of gravestones. Because for them, it's a theological thing that they want to convert everybody who ever lived. So they just have to know their name. I'm serious.
I believe you. I didn't know that.
That's what it's about. That's what it's about. If you just understand the theology of it. So their theology is that you have to be a Mormon in order to be saved. So if that's the case, what do you do with everybody who lived before there were Mormons? They're all damned? That's pretty scary. Because you have relatives. You know, especially if you're in the early Mormon church, so that means all your relatives, everybody that you knew, is damned to hell forever. So they had to figure out a way to make them not damned. So the way that you do it is posthumous conversions. All you have to do is know their name. And then somebody dips in a mikveh for them. They have their own little mikveh bath things. Yep, and they say the name. And so they just read lists of name, and they have a proxy person dipping, reading a name, dip. Name, dip, name. So they want to convert the whole world. Yes.
Are they coming in the water?
So they probably warm the water. But anyway, there was a whole big controversy a few years ago because they were converting Holocaust deaths because they had those names. So there were Jews who were very upset about it.
Right.
I personally wouldn't be upset about it because if you believe it works, so you should be thankful. And if you don't believe it works, so you shouldn't care.
So,
it's really like
if they were Jewish, it cannot convert them.
Right. So what I'm saying is, if you believe what they're doing,
vibe is probably a key component for something.
No, not in their theology. That's not. No problem.
To ask them, you know.
Yeah. No.
Like to ask them.
No. It's not part of it.
It's a good source for genealogy. But you know, at least they're not trying to. You know, it's like other people tried said converter will kill you.
Right. Here, as long as you're dead, we might as well convert you. Okay, let's get back to our subject at hand. Okay, so that's sharing stories.
The story, you mean not just read the Haggadah but make it live?
Absolutely, and you do not have to read the whole Haggadah. You do have to go according to the order in the Haggadah, but you do not have to read every single part of it. You can tell stories.
So, for example, what do you do? I'm so tired that I'm
driving. Right. So, unfortunately, that's not the main topic tonight, and there's other stuff to do, so we're not going to go into it deeply, but tell stories. So, you could tell your kids, how did you come here? No, it's not so easy. You have to think of them. You have to take some time and think of them. What stories do I want to tell? How will I transfer my trust in God to my children? How will I transfer what I care about deeply as a Jew to my children? That's what you want to think about. So what story do you want to share, right? What did your mother say to you or your grandmother say to you in a moment of tenderness that made a big difference for you? You know, that's the story you want to share. So find a time to share that story or incorporate it in or whatever it is. But that's what you want to do is sometimes it's just the Seder is great. You know, sometimes people, that works them. But for some people, they want to add stuff in. So you want to make sure that people are connecting through the Seder.
Question. Yeah. Could you share a story about your coming to freedom in your relationship with God?
So, yes and no, because not coming to freedom. I think it's something we did discuss a little bit earlier, but it's fine. I think it's very important to reiterate it. While it is the time of our freedom, this is not a time of freedom from God.
No.
But it's service to God. We are free to serve God.
I'm sorry, that's what I meant. The freedom to embrace my heritage.
Yes. That kind of thing, for sure. My problem is that I think there's a lot of Seders there's a lot of groups that bastardize the Seder, that make it into their own. You know, whether they're Christians who make the three matzahs into Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, which they do.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes. Wow. Or feminist satyrs that talk about the 10 plagues that men have visited upon women. Oh yeah. Wow. Oh yeah. Or humanistic satyrs that I saw humanistic Haggadah that the bracha on the Karpas was Brucha Adama al Pirya Vituva. Blessed is the earth on her fruit and her goodness. Because it's humanistic. There's no God language in the whole Seder. So I'm thinking, Rick, really? So you could make it into just a conversation about freedom, which a lot of people do. That's why when you said that, it just made me... That's why I just want to make clear. It is not, even though it's the time of our freedom, it is not just about freedom from bondage. It's not about freedom from addictions. It's not about freedom from what's bothering you. It's not about freedom from your perceptions on things. That's not what it is. It's about freedom from Paro to serve God. Freedom from the rest of the world to serve God.
As a people.
Freedom from your own self-interest to serve God. That's why we don't eat chametz. Chametz representing ego, which is where I feel like going. Freedom from my own ego to serve God. So if you have a story like that, that's great. Where you feel free to embrace your heritage and connect. Fabulous. If it's about connection, right? But not just about generic freedom.
No, I was specifically thinking about you, and I know you go to a bunch of classes. You ask the question, which story should I tell? So I started thinking.
Right.
I was thinking about how often you come to learn with Eliza or with Eleanor, you know, that you learn, and that increases your freedom to embrace your spirituality.
But the problem I have is that the table, I'd rather be with the side of the kids because they go to day schools and yeshiva, so like I do questions and answers and fun. I cannot lecture.
Great. No, you should not lecture.
The
you should not.
Adults are not, like, if I start telling how I feel about how connected I am to God, it would be so.
Don't talk to them about
it. Some don't even believe in God, and some, we're in all the spectrum. So
sit with
so
the kids.
Touchy how to.
It is. It's very touchy. You have to figure out how you're going to do it in that context, for sure. And every year you have to refigure it out. So you do have to figure it out for the people that you're sharing that Seder with. And if you can sit with a kid, great, sit with a kid.
Well, it's the same thing, but I'd rather.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you're sitting next to a child, so do that.
Response from them.
Absolutely. So then do that. Questions and answers are great.
But your idea how we transfer. Sorry.
That's my fault. No, I just should have turned it off.
How we transfer deeply, you know, our feelings. That's so important to do, and it's a pity that I have to restrain myself.
Right. It is.
I don't know how welcome it is that I even talk. I don't know, and I'm not. I don't edit like you. So my husband says, edit like 3 points. Like you cannot like. So right. All what I'm learning, you know, you have to decide.
Yeah, you do. So that's why you have to prepare. You do have to prepare. Right. It's not just a free-for-all. I mean, in some places it is. You know, I mean, on the West side, I think I mentioned this last time, or maybe I just said in my Lishma class, the whole conversation the next day, I mean, who's cool is measured by how late your Seder went. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. How late did yours go? Oh, 2. We went to 3. 3? We didn't even go to sleep. Sleep? Who thinks of sleep? So, yeah, it's the cool ones are the ones who stay up as late as you can.
It doesn't mean it was deeper.
No, but I'm saying if you're staying up that late, you can share a lot more stories. You don't have to edit as much. If your Seder's going to end at midnight or 12:30, then yes, you have to prepare and edit. That's important.
What parts of the Haggadah can you skip?
Some of the Magid parts, because you can tell your own stories.
Oh, so take out those stories and add the others?
Yeah. If you want to, you can. You need to drink 4 cups. You need to have Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. So you have to have those parts of it. You might want to check with your rabbi just to make sure exactly what's the minimum requirement of stuff you have to have. But you for sure have to have Pesach, Matzah, Maror, and 4 cups of wine in that order.
Yeah, I'm not real interested in a minimalist Seder.
Right, I'm just saying, if you want to know what you can skip, so you don't want to skip the wrong part.
Some people say, can you know? Skip? And I'm like, no, it's good to know if you tell me.
You can.
You can skip.
You can skip
somebody just said it was supposed to eat the afikoman before midnight, although I'm not sure what midnight is.
Midnight is chatzot. It's the middle of the night, halachically. So it's from sundown till sunrise, that middle point. So it's about, probably it's about 1:20. But you can check. You can just look up on myzmanim.com.
What, we have to eat the afikoman before
my
what time?
Zimanim. You have to eat the afikoman before midnight. So that's just the midpoint between sundown and sun up.
So when the kids find it, we all have to have a piece?
Yes. You all have a piece. You all have to have a piece, plus you have to add on to make the minimum shiur, depending on if you're keeping that level
so
of halacha. It's uncomfortably big.
Everyone has to eat.
They have little cards, yeah, that you can follow, that you just put your matzah on top of the card to make sure you have enough, and it's a lot. It's like that much. Yeah, it's a lot. So you just have one of those cards, and you just measure by that. Yes. Or...
So that's more than the afikoman. So you have to buy the afikoman.
Yes, and you have to make it up. Same thing with motzi, same thing with matzah, same thing with korach.
Before midnight, that is 1:20.
I'm saying it's around then. You have to look it up and find exactly when it is. I don't know exactly when it is. So you have to find when it is.
I thought the kids find it and then they get this present. I didn't know we had to eat it.
Yeah, you have to eat it, and then the present is usually, I mean, the traditional way is you can either just give a gift, or the traditional way is to barter. That they get to ask, the one who gets it gets to ask for something that they want, and they hold it ransom because you can't go on without it. So that one gets to say like whatever they want, and it can be, you know, you have to get it back from them. So you have to.
They give the $5.
Five. Anybody who's smart knows that's the time to get an iPod. That's the time for a new bike. That's the time for. That's like they know to ask for. That's the time for a puppy. You know.
We used to wrap the afikoman in a napkin. The kids came once, and then I said, well, it took you long enough. You know, it was, you know, wherever it was, and they went, ha! And it turned out they didn't have the afikoman. They just took a piece of matzah, and they wrapped it in a napkin. Then I told them where it was, and they got it. After that, we used an afikoman cover.
Yeah, an afikoman cover. So Rabbi Unger also said that he used to hide some decoy afikomans around the house. So inside the little bag, the afikoman, he would have a few, and some of them would say decoy inside. So decoy, it's a trick, right? It's the fake.
Oh,
so he would hide like 4, right? And only 1 would be real.
Wow.
One year he decorated the house with balloons for one of the grandkids' birthdays, and he had a bouquet of balloons in the corner, which was just nobody noticed because there's balloons all over the place, right? And a weight, and it was attached to a basket. So after the afikoman, he took out the weight and put the afikoman in the basket and let it float up. He has very high ceilings. Wow. So there it was, and the kids are like, "No fair! How are we supposed to get it?"
That's great.
Yeah.
That's the most creative I've heard. Mm-hmm. And that was not the fake one. Break the balloons.
No, that was the real one. Yeah, yeah. Either break the balloons, or he had a long pole to open the skylight on the roof. That's what they used to pull it down. Right,
that's
so
creative.
Fun stuff, right? And then in addition to that, he was clear, because this was always my problem, I didn't like the kids leaving the table to go find it, because they knew they were going to get the good prize, right? So the rule is no looking, no searching at all until the meal.
Right? Okay, after.
Until the meal.
Okay.
Once you get to the meal, you're finished with most of the Haggadah, and now the meal has been served, that's when the kids can go look.
That's what they don't eat?
Who cares if they eat? They ate enough already. They had 2 shirim of matzah, and they had a whole big thing of maror and an egg, and they're done. I mean, once you have soup on top of that, you can. There's no. Right. I don't understand why we make a meal. We just serve dessert at that point. But
can we dedicate this class to somebody?
Sure.
He just came down with a really bad illness. Yecheskel ben Shendel.
You should have a fresh lima.
And he's going in for surgery tomorrow.
Okay, let's switch over to Chol HaMoed. Okay, so I wrote on our sheets here Chol, the words Chol and Moed and Kodesh. So Chol means profane, really, or mundane. Mundane, really, is the best word. Chol is mundane. Is it also what?
Sand in the beach.
Chol means sand, right? That's true. But here it does not mean the sand of the holiday. It means the mundane of the holiday. Chol. Yeah, this I do have.
Oh, yeah, you put that here.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Maggie. This is for Maggie.
She was giving me the kitchen. I couldn't get her out.
Uh-huh, right, I hear. So chol is mundane. Moed is holiday. But really, if you write the Hebrew... mem vav ayin dalad moed, so it's the same root as yaad, which is a destination, or vad, which is a group coming together, like the vad hakashrut,
right?
Vad habayit, right? So vad means coming together. So the ad, that yaad destination, means where you're headed to or coming together. The ohel moed, the tent of meeting, right? So moed is holiday, but it really means meeting point. So it's the meeting point where the Jews, unlike Shabbat, we Jews are in charge of when the holidays are. We set the calendar, and we can play with the calendar just a little bit to make sure that things work out well for us. Like, for instance, we play with the calendar so that Yom Kippur will never be on a Friday. So we don't go from Yom Kippur right into Shabbos, right? So we'll plan it so Yom Kippur will be on Thursday, or something like that. So we're the ones who meet God at that point. And we're the ones who make the meeting times. Mm-hmm. So Chol HaMoed. So Moed is about a meeting time. It's a station where we meet Hashem. And it's a place where we absorb the holiness. Chol of the Moed, it's not that it's Chol, like Shavua and Chol. Right, so the word chol, meaning mundane, so we do use that word to refer to the weekdays, right? Yemei chol, right? The weekdays are chol. Or something that's regular, that's not kodesh, is chol. So, but in this case, the chol is modifying moed. Not that the moed really, I'm trying to make sure I'm right, not that the moed is modifying the chol. Whatever, it's a much higher level than a regular weekday. People make the mistake of thinking that it's holiday, holiday, free time, free time, free time, free time, holiday, holiday, right? That's not what it is. So the intermediate days of the festival, which was how we say it in English, Chol HaMoed is the intermediate days of the festival, they are holidays.
Can you try it?
So, lucky for you, I looked up the halachas.
Can you try it?
Okay, so let us look right here at the 5 kinds of work that are permitted, which are listed in the Mishnah Berurah's introduction to Chol HaMoed in the Aruch Chaim, number 530. I got this from a website. I think it's from jewishvirtuallibrary.com. Okay, so here are the 5 things that you are permitted to do, 5 categories of things that you're permitted to do. So, first of all, think this way. Everything that you can't do on Yontif, you can't do on Chol HaMoed. It's Yontif. except for these five categories of things that you can do. But think yantif and then think exceptions. So that's what Chol HaMoed is. It's not that it's just special weekdays. It's yantif, but you can do some stuff that you can't do on yantif. So here are the categories. The first one is Dvar Ha'aved, work done to avoid a loss. For instance, if the produce of a field will be lost if not irrigated, then you're permitted to irrigate it. Right? So you, let's just say you have a garden, right, in the backyard, a flower garden even, just for looks. Right? But if you don't water it, you're not allowed to water your plants on Yantif. You're not really supposed to water them on Chol HaMoed either. But if they will die because you didn't water them for 8 days straight, then you're permitted to water them. Now let's just extend that for a minute. Let's say you're a farmer, right? It's Pesach time, and there's a sukkah time, and there's a crop, and you're busy. You're busy building your sukkah. You're busy with other preparations, and you just don't have time to bring that crop in before Yantif. And you think to yourself, you know what? I'll lose the whole thing over Chol HaMoed if I don't bring it in, so I'll be permitted to harvest during Chol HaMoed. No, you're not. If you put work off to do during Chol HaMoed, these do not apply. Mm. You're not permitted to put off work to do during Chol HaMoed. So you have to plan for Yantif and plan for Chol HaMoed. Even if you planned for Yantif, though, if your flower garden will die if you don't water it for 9 days straight. Depending on your state, if you live in Oregon, it won't. But if you live here in Colorado, it will. So then you're permitted to irrigate. So that's to prevent something from being lost. Right? The second one is Tzarchei HaMoed, things needed for the holiday. So an example here is, if necessary, a sukkah could be completely rebuilt. It was extremely windy over Yantif and the whole sukkah fell apart, right? Building the sukkah certainly wouldn't be permitted on Yantif, hammering in nails or plugging in your drill and drilling it and putting it back. But on Chol HaMoed, because you need it for the moed, you could do that. Okay, three.
Well, what if building the sukkah didn't require those things?
Still, you wouldn't be permitted to do it on Yantif.
If it fell, it fell.
If it fell, it fell, right. On Yantif, you can't do anything with it. If you have guests, too bad. Go somebody else's sukkah and, you know, tell your guests not to come. That happens sometimes. You know, I remember one time friends of ours across the street had just gotten those new bamboo mats.
They
fall. They fly away like a magic carpet in the wind, right? So their sukkah was gorgeous and roomy, and one wind took their whole sukkah off, and they couldn't use their whole sukkah for. You can't put it back during Yantif. You can put it back on Chol HaMoed, but you can't put it back over the. So those 2 days of Yantif, they couldn't use it. They had to come over and use our sukkah, which is fine. But we have a recessed roof, and now that we got the mats, we have, because of their experience, we put a pole on top of the mats, like a 4x4 on top of the mat, so they can't fly away. But let's say it's something else needed for the holiday. You need more groceries, right? You're not allowed to do laundry, but you just used 30 hand towels over those 2 days of Yantif with the whole seders and everything that went on. And you need hand towels for the rest, so you could wash one load of hand towels. Right? Can't throw other stuff in there. Only what you need for Yantif. Right? So for the sake of Yantif, you could do.
What about the phone, the driving? So on Chag,
On Chag, you can't do that, but on Chol HaMoed, you can. It's particularly to do something. Yeah, yes, you can.
You can drive, you can.
You can talk on the phone, right? So should you say, oh, I'm allowed to drive, so I can go deliver pizzas? No. So you really shouldn't. However,
many guests and you're out of
here. You can for sure do that, no problem. If you want to go on a trip with your kids, no problem.
On Chol HaMoed,
no problem. You can do that.
And fly,
right. But you should try to, not work if you can. Now let's just say, for instance, you have 2 weeks of paid vacation a year, right? And you don't really want to take it for Pesach and Sukkot. You'd rather go with your family to the south of France or camping or whatever it is you want to do for your 2 weeks of vacation, right? So you could take unpaid vacation for Chol HaMoed, but that might cause you financial distress to the point like that it would be hard to pay your mortgage or whatever to take a whole week off. You are permitted to work what you have to work during Chol HaMoed if you need the money, or if it would jeopardize your job or jeopardize the chance of advancement. Like if you're going to look not serious, let's say you're clerking for a judge, right? So you take off Yantif. But you want that judge to recommend you. You're a law student, right? And you want that, or you just graduated, and you want that judge to recommend you to a top firm, and you don't want to look like a slacker. You're allowed to work on Chol Moed for that judge. That kind of thing. I mean, so that's the idea, is that if it will jeopardize your job, jeopardize your income, jeopardize your chance for advancement, you are permitted to work. But you shouldn't plan to. So let's say you're a student, and you're getting ready for Pesach, and you say, you know what, I'll study for that exam. I'll write that paper during Chol Hamoed. No, you can't do that. You can't put it off to be done during Chol Hamoed. But you can do your regular work.
And so your example about paid vacation somewhere?
So you don't have to. All right. Oh, so okay, thank you. So paid vacation. So do you have to, because you're not allowed to put off the work, right? Is taking your vacation in the summer planning to work during Chol Hamoed?
That's what I'm wondering.
Right. So most rabbis say no, it's not. Especially if you're, the reason why you're taking vacation during the summer or during another time is for a positive family experience, right? So it's not that you're planning to work on Chol Hamoed for this. It's that you're taking this vacation for Shalom Bayit, for building your family, for the necessary rest and relaxation that you need to keep going all year. Whatever it is. So it's not that you're trading Yontif for this. It's that this is an important use of your time. And the results might be, but it's not like you're doing this now in order, mm-hmm. saying, I'll take it now because I don't really care about Chol Hamoed. Right? That's not what it is.
And people that are in, if you have kids in college and they only come, if we're lucky, in the summer.
Right.
Maybe you get 5 days together, that's like a miracle. Right?
Right. So you take that time.
But in Israel it's easier because Sukkot, you're off school.
Yeah,
it's like
built
already that you're off. I don't know if the parents are off. But
yeah, a lot of people, it's just everything's slower, for sure it is. Yeah, it is.
Here it's an F, everything is...
It is, yeah.
Against the parent.
Yeah. Okay, so number three category. This is an interesting category. Bishvil Poel She'en Lo Ma Yochal. Right, so let's say somebody comes knocking on your door. Presumably, in this case, it's a Jew because you live in the shtetl. That's why they write this, right? Somebody comes knocking on your door and they don't have money for food. You know, I mean, I get this actually in my neighborhood. I have a few relationships with a few different Mexicans who will come over the day they need to pay their cell phone bill. Can I rake your lawn? Can I shovel your? Do you have anything for me? I need money. It's not I call when I need. It's like they knock on the door when they need, right? Yeah. So if somebody like that knocks on your door, you can think of something for them to do so that they can have money for food.
And maybe what you're not allowed to do.
Right, but you could, let's say you don't water your garden, or you wouldn't prune that tree, or you wouldn't rake that yard. You're not allowed to ask them.
Like Shabbat.
It's like Shabbat. No, you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do some stuff that you do. However, if they need to work for food, then you can give them a job.
Then it's okay.
Right, then you can have them do. So work created to enable a worker to make enough money to eat. So I don't know if that counts for cell phone bills today, if that's food or not. But it's close, right?
It's a mitzvah.
Right.
They're in trouble.
So I don't know. I'm just saying, there are halachic lines. So you'd have to ask a Shaila about, you know, cell phone bills. Tzarchei Rabim, the needs of the public, right? So let's say the Eruv falls down, right? So everybody wants to carry on Shabbos. So can you fix it? That means bringing a cherry picker truck and going up and hammering the Eruv back up to the top of the pole. Yes, you can do that on Chol Moed, even though that's expert work and difficult work. You can do that because the community needs to be able to carry on Shabbos. Or, for instance, here it says fixing a broken city water main, right? The community needs the water. So yes, that's expert work, but you can do it on Chol Moed because everybody needs it. Let's say for you, though, right, in your house, you're not permitted to have your new roof put on, or your bathroom redone, or your tile redone, or your floors refinished, or painting done, nothing like that. No expert work. Unless, let's say, your toilet's overflowing and overflowing and overflowing, and they can't figure out what it is, and they have to replace the water main, so then they can do that. They can dig up, and because you have to have a toilet. let's see. And the fifth category is Ma'aseh Hedyot, simple acts. So flipping on a light switch, which on Shabbat is forbidden.
And also
Chag is forbidden. But Chol Hamoed is permitted. You're allowed to do those easy things that it's nothing to do, that we always wonder on Shabbat, why can't I do this on Shabbos? How hard is that? You are permitted to do that. But that also extends to the category, for instance, of crafts and sewing and other things like that. So I think I mentioned that. Maybe
yeah,
I,
the, you're right? An expert. So you
right.
Can.
Experts but can't do it. Right. Experts can't do it because you're not allowed to do expert work, but you can do non-expert work. So your hem falls down in your dress. You can use your stapler to put it back up. You could take huge long stitches. You could use double stick tape. But you can't take nice little perfect stitches because you know how to hem well. So then you wouldn't be the one hemming it. You're not allowed to do expert work. Okay. All right. Now let's do Sfirat HaOmer. So I'm going to hand out.
Is this it?
Nope. This is it.
Could you just very briefly go over hot water use on Yantif?
On Yantif, you can use hot water.
Can you bathe?
So, yes, you have to ask your rabbi, but my understanding is that you can bathe. You're not supposed to stand under the shower on Yom Tov, but you could bathe body parts. So, let's say the few times, usually you don't need it at all the first day of Yom Tov, no problem. That's just like Shabbos, right? We don't bathe on Shabbos, right? But let's say it happens to be a 3-day Yom Tov, right? It's Shabbos, Yantif, Yantif, or Yantif, Yantif, Shabbos. Do we have Shabbos before Yantif? I don't think so. Well, it's Yantif. Pesach is 2 days of Yantif. Let's say it's 3 days in a row, right? So you're going to go, let's say it's 2 days of Yantif that goes right into Shabbos. We do have Shabbos. Well, sometimes it goes into Yantif.
Yeah, we do.
But then it's overlapped. Yeah. Anyway, so you're not the type who wears a shaitel, right? Your hair is getting greasy looking, whether you're a high school student or whatever it is, right? You don't want to look that way. So there are ways to wash your hair carefully. You can't wring your hair out. You could wash your hair. You could wash your body limbs. You could get in the shower with the spritz thing. But you're not supposed to stand under and take a regular shower.
Bath.
Or a regular bath. But you could bathe body parts in warm water on Yom Tov.
You mean only if there is a telephone? We call it telephone.
Right. I mean, I think, or you can stand in the shower and stick one limb in. And like, it's not supposed to be a regular shower. You're not supposed to take a regular shower.
So how do we do it? Irregular.
And you can't wring anything out either. So you can't take a washcloth and get it full of water and wring it out and then wash part of you either.
No,
can't do that. So you have to keep the halachas. So maybe a bath puff that doesn't squeeze you could use if you're rubbing. Or just your hand, you could just splash like that, you know, if you need to. So,
but the shower is...
You're not supposed to stand under the shower. I mean, some people wouldn't bathe at all on Yantif, but I'm just saying, you are allowed to bathe body parts.
So then, if you get into a bathtub with a thingy,
yeah, so you could do that.
So you can wash,
or you could use a cup, and you can wash dishes with hot water. You're allowed to use hot water on Yom Tov because you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov.
Or in Pesach, you can cook.
On Pesach, you can cook. On Yom Tov, you can cook, unlike on Shabbos. So it's just like Shabbos, except for cooking, which means you can transfer fire, not ignite a fire, but you can transfer fire from an existing flame to a existing flame to a like gas that's, and you can transfer the fire, but you can't extinguish a fire. So make sure you don't blow that little candle out or the match out that you transferred the fire with. You have to just drop it into the sink and let it go out by itself. But because you're allowed to cause something to become warmed, you can drain your hot water tank and cold water will come in, which will get heated up, and that's permitted on Yom Tov, not on Shabbat. Okay. Let's move on to Sfirat HaOmer. So,
I'm always in Shabbat, it's cold water.
Yeah, it's hard on Shabbat. Everybody take one of these. So here's what I want to do. So we're going to do Sfirat HaOmer. I'll tell you more about it as you start taking everything. Maybe we should do it in a different way. I'm thinking about it. Hang on 1 second before we do this. Everybody takes scissors too. So, Sfirat HaOmer is the counting of the Omer. Everybody knows something about it. Each week, it's 7 weeks. Each week has its own character trait. Each day within each week has its own character trait. We're going to make a tear-away chart that's going to help you, hopefully, understand the day in the week and the relationships of the days and the weeks together. And then you'll be able to use that for counting also. You can just take it off. I don't have numbers on here, so that's not going to help you. But each day, we want to just set it up so that will work. So I think actually what we should do is stack the pages. We only need one of each. This one has to be cut apart.
I got one in the mail yesterday.
Yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Could you cut that one apart? No, I have to cut it.
Sure. It's
not hard enough to put it.
Yeah, it is hard enough to put it. Get rid of my extra four pages. Right? Pardon? And then you can't say the bracha, right?
You want me to cut each one?
Yeah, we just need, you just only have to do one row, because one per person. Oh my gosh, my printer is so frustrating. Here, can you cut that one apart, please? And maybe you can cut that one apart. And
everybody gets one.
Everybody gets 1 week, and then you're going to get 7 days. Sheba Netzach. Yeah, you only need one row.
One for us.
One for you, right.
We cut each rectangle.
Yeah. But you only need one row.
Another week.
Yeah.
Another spin. Yeah. Not sure what you want to do with
it. Right. Hopefully I will figure it out well.
We can get it nice, we can say it in the morning.
You can say it until sundown and then still be able to say the bracha. If you
till sundown?
Till sundown.
Yeah, I think following morning you can do it without the bracha.
Yes, you can. Till sundown. That's your cutoff. If you remember, through any time during the day.
With the bracha. Yeah?
No. You can only say the bracha at night.
Oh, okay.
Okay, can this... I don't think you can do seven all at once. So this is three. If you can just keep these three together. And just do the one row of these three. Keep those together. And then we'll stack them. And hopefully that will work.
You may cut these two?
Yeah, these are the days of the week. These are the weeks.
Okay.
Okay, so you just need, again, one row. Mm-hmm. But keep these three together because these three are in order.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I mean?
No, I know what you mean about cutting. Keep them together.
Keep those three pages together because three different ones.
Well, I was cutting each.
That's fine. And keep those four together. Cut them all at the same time. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Okay, while you're cutting, I'm going to tell you what we're going to do.
So do you want me to continue to cut them?
Yeah, just keep the pages together, exactly, so that because they're lined up, so that that stays with that, stays with that, stays with that, stays, okay? Okay, so now just listen while you're cutting, and I'll tell you what we're doing. Okay, that's fine.
What do you want me to give away?
Just hang on a second. So what we're going to do is we're each going to take a week, and there'll be an order. So this is, for instance, the week of Gevura, okay? The week of strength, the week of... I want to be able to explain so much more, but we're going to have to... You'll have to listen to a different tape to get all the explanations for each day. But at least I want to help you see how they relate to each other. So Shebe means within, right? So within that character trait, I guess I should have. I put it in English, but I didn't translate it. So Gevura is strength. Chesed is loving kindness. So it goes, Chesed is the first week, loving kindness. The second week is Gevura, that's strength or boundaries. The third week is Tiferet, that's balance between the two. The fourth week is Netzach, that's eternity. The fifth week is Hod, that's splendor. The sixth week is Yesod, that's foundation. And the seventh week is Malchut, that's majesty. Each one of those weeks is associated with one of our patriarchs. I'll tell you in a minute. So each one of them expressed or manifested one of those character traits very strongly. Don't separate out your stacks.
I only have one stack.
Right, don't separate them, though. There's supposed to be four stacks.
I only have one stack. That's the ones that you handed me.
I handed you a whole page to cut four sets of stacks from.
See, I'm not sure you're the right thing either. I got a
single sheet, but then that one I kept together.
Right, so there should be four of those. No, there should just be four because where's the other half of the sheet?
I gave them
out. Oh, great, perfect. Okay, fine. That's what you were supposed to do. Great. Okay, so...
What should I do with this?
Hang on, now take tape. There's two sets of tape. that you can share. And so what we're going to do is each week, so while you're taping, I'll tell you the rest of the stuff, but this is what you want to do. You want to take your Sheba Gvura, you actually might even staple. Maybe that will be
you easier.
Take your week, so where is your, let me have a chassid staff.
You want to tell us the patriarchs.
But I want the, this one cut. Right, you don't have a chassid stack yet. Each person needs a stack. There's two stacks. Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet should be in a row. Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet, yeah. Then behind that should go the second stack, which is Netzach. Netzach, Hod, Yisod, Malchut.
Okay,
that's what it needs to look like. And you need to have... Oh, we do need more. We need seven stacks like that.
Right, and I have...
Everybody needs seven stacks like that. I think I have enough papers for that.
What are the colors indicate?
Okay,
we all need a pink one, right? Should I give...
I don't know what to do.
Okay, hang on 1 minute. Everybody needs one each of the weeks. And everybody needs seven stacks of days. So that you can... I think stapling is going to work better than taping. So that you can
weeks
staple
are white,
like this.
And days are colored?
Yeah. No. Every trait has its own color. So that the stacks... So everybody make sure you get... So first let's start with everybody getting seven stacks exactly the same. That say... That are the smaller papers that just have the traits like that. So everybody needs... So I'm going to hand out more papers so you can cut more stacks. That's what I should have done. It's confusing
as
you see.
The one that says Sheba, that's the week.
That's a week. So if it says Sheba, that's a week. So you need 7 weeks. So everybody make sure you have 7 weeks.
I only have six.
Okay, so there should be 7 weeks.
The ones with the shin.
And then you need seven stacks of days. And then I think it's going to be easiest to staple it, which is why Stel brought
the
stapler.
This one every week, right?
Right. So can you pass your stapler, please? I think one staple in the middle is good. Hang on.
I should have a Sheba.
You should have a Sheba everything. So that's 1 week like that. Okay? So everybody needs seven of these, but each... So the fronts will be the same seven stacks, and then you'll have seven different colors underneath, and then we'll stack them together. So...
I don't have a Gevura.
I'm confused.
Does anybody have a Gevura?
Me too, because I didn't cut it
Chesed.
I have one Gevura.
What's the order? Is it Chesed, Gevura,
okay.
Tiferet?
Chesed, Gevura, Tiferet.
Right. I don't have a Gevura.
Okay.
I have one Tiferet.
But I think, let's put that together with the rest, because I think we're going to need more. Don't cut that yet.
Okay.
Chesed, Gevura, and let's do a Tiferet.
Yes.
So, yeah, can you cut those again? Cut the whole thing. I made a mistake by not telling you. We need seven each, really. So, really, everybody needs almost a whole page.
Who has Malchut?
Here's a Malchut that hasn't been cut.
But here, stack that with
some
this.
Some are little and some are big, so what you need is big and then small.
That's correct. There's Shebez,
no,
right?
No, Shebez, some are small.
Are big.
But some are small.
No, they shouldn't be.
I
it's a mistake. Then take a different one if you have a small one.
You have a Sheba Tiferet that should be big anymore.
Here's a Sheba. That's Malchut.
It's bigger. It's bigger than the
Well, okay. Small.
Yeah, that's what it's supposed to be.
It's bigger than
it's still bigger than you
No, but all of them are small, so don't bother.
Except
for those two, they're all small. Sheba. So, but
that's weird. Okay.
They're bigger than this. So.
Hopefully. But maybe not. It's supposed to be. Yeah.
Yep.
So, just for my peace of mind,
yes.
Could you just say the 7 days?
Yes.
Chesed,
Chesed, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, Malchut. So I'm going to give you a stack. Everybody's going to get a stack. Chesed, Gevura, Tiferet.
Netzach, Hod.
You know what? How about if I let you guys go through these and figure it out while I keep talking, because I feel bad that like I want to do the crap. But here, stack those. Thank you.
Stacks should everybody.
Everybody needs seven stacks of days, and one
in
each
same,
of each week.
In the same order.
In the same exact order. Okay. Now, while you're doing that, you can interrupt me, but I'll keep telling you. Okay. So, the week of Chesed. Is associated with Abraham, who's the Ish Chesed. He's the man of loving kindness, And that whole week's underlying theme is kindness. But each day has a different facet. So the first day would be chesed, within chesed.
Right.
And the second day is gevura, within chesed. But the theme of the week is chesed. So you might want to consider the theme of a whole week and think about that week and its theme, and think about how can you manifest something of the twist of each day, right? What would gevura, sheba chesed, look like for you?
Right?
And you can think about that.
Okay,
she'll pass you some, hopefully. She's going to make a stack.
Okay.
Sorry.
I think what you have to tell me is more important than me.
Right, okay, so then comes Yitzchak. Yitzchak is the man of gevura. He expressed his ability to be in charge of himself, strength and boundaries, limits. That's what gevura is. And he expressed that by being able to be bound on the altar. It was not even considered one of his tests. That's how strong he was. For Abraham, the man of chesed, it was a huge test to kill his child. But for Yitzchak, the man of strength and boundaries, it wasn't even a test for him. It wasn't even considered one of his tests. Because that's how clear he was on his boundaries and his place in the world. Tiferet is Yaakov. That's the blend of the two. Oh, I should tell you the colors that I chose. There are colors that are associated Kabbalistically. I didn't use those. I don't have the right colors for it. So I'll just tell you why I chose my colors, and they're not even quite right. I do have another presentation that I have in felt that has the right colors. But I chose blue for chesed because it's flowing like water. Chesed flows. Right? And I chose really red for gevura, but I had to take gray because I didn't have any red. So because that's boundaries are stopping. So if it would be red and red and blue, then really Tiferet, the blend of the two,
purple.
Should be purple, except for I, by mistake, used purple for Malchut, so I used pink.
So that's your blend?
That's my blend. Right, that's my blend.
Flowers are blue and red and purple?
No, they're not. Skip that. Skip the Kabbalistic colors. We're not going there.
I don't have to. I just need
everything but that one.
No, but you need the weak stacks.
Right, we have a bunch of weak stacks.
You have 7 of them? Whole ones? You only have 3s, I think, because she did. You'll have to keep going.
I'm the Shebe.
These have 3s.
There's only 3s because I gave you 3 sheets and I gave her 4 sheets. Right, so you have to keep cutting. Oh no, those are Shebes. Okay, okay, great. Here's some more 3s, some chesed to cut. Chesed, gevura.
Here.
So here, cut these gevuras.
Yeah, but it's not Sheba gevura. I'm still waiting.
Oh, you'll need 1 Shebet Vura. Right, that should come.
That's what I'm looking for.
You want to have
here.
The Shebet Vura?
That's
oh,
here.
I see. Some of them are full and some of them aren't. Okay.
So, Eric.
Okay, so Tiferet is the blend. That's Yaakov, who was able to blend the qualities of his father and his grandfather into a balance. So we usually see Chesed depicted on the... okay, I'm dyslexic.
On the right.
On the right. Chesed should be on the right. Gevura should be on the left. Tiferet should be in the middle. Then Netzach and Hod are twins. They represent Aaron, or represented through them are Moshe and Aaron. Moshe is associated with Netzach, and Aaron is associated with Hod. Netzach means eternity. That's why Moshe is representing it, because he gave us the Torah, which makes us the eternal nation. Hod is splendor. That's why it's associated with Aaron, because he's such a shining Jew. He was Ohev Shalom, Varodev Shalom. He loved peace and he pursued peace. So that splendor, Hod is splendor, shone from him. That's why I chose yellow, really gold, something that's shiny, and green for Netzach, because that goes on forever. Green means go. So those are on two sides. That's also right and left, but they're sometimes interchanged because they really are considered twins. And in terms of body organs, and I don't know the other ones really, but those two are associated with your kidneys.
Okay, yeah. Can I say something about the twins?
Sure.
Because at one time I was doing a presentation. The legs, they're the legs, and legs can't work without the other one.
Uh-huh, that's
arms
interesting.
Arms can work independently, legs can't.
Uh-huh, that's interesting. Okay, so legs, I heard kidneys, but I'm sure there's more. So legs too, they're interesting. Legs do need two. And then comes Yesod. Yesod is Yosef. It's foundation. Yesod is foundation, which is why I chose white, because the foundation, it's in the middle. its foundation. So it's not a blend of Netzach and Hod. That's not why it's in the middle. It's in the middle because it's number 6, and it's the channel. So it goes like that.
Right.
Like that. Yeah. It's the channel of the other. It's number 6. The letter that's associated with the number 6 is a vav, which means and. So it is the and that connects the 6 with number 7. They're each also associated with the day of the week. So this one would be associated with Friday, the channel through which the weekdays flow into Shabbos. Malchut is, I'll go back to Sod in a minute, Malchut is represented by King David, and that is considered a feminine realm, Malchut. It's the bottom one, and it's the one of manifestation, majesty, that we should be focusing on manifesting majesty, if possible. But it's, everything else flows through the channel of Yesod into the feminine realm of majesty. So flowing through that, flowing through the vav, which is the and or the connector, you could think about the organ that that might be associated with on a male that looks like a vav. So it's that thing that creates the and that connects, right? Him and her, it connects the two together. The word vav in Hebrew means a hook, right? Or a coupling, like in a train where you connect things, one train car to another, they're connected with the vavim. So it is the connector. So why Yosef? So Yosef, his last name, right? We have the whole Avinu family, Avraham Avinu, and Yitzchak Avinu, and Yaakov Avinu. Yosef is Hatzadik. That's correct. He's more of a tzaddik than Avraham, more of a tzaddik than Moshe. Haka Moshe is Moshe Rabbeinu, not Moshe Hatzadik, right? But Yosef has a special title of Hatzadik, because of his strength in foundation, his strength in Yesod, because he was able at 17 and gorgeous, right? That he's the only male in the whole Torah that's described as beautiful, which means it meant something to him. It's an important description, right? So he's a gorgeous 17-year-old hormonal male, and Potiphar's wife is all over him, and he resists her, which means that he's able to channel his sexual drive. Right, which is the foundation for the channeling of all drives. So Yesod is associated with Yosef, Hatzadik, the righteous one, because he was able to channel that. So that's the foundation of channeling, and it's through that that everything else flows down into Malchut, which is the realm of King David, manifesting majesty, but not the majesty of Queen Elizabeth, or any other monarch on the planet who is manifesting their family's dynasty, right? And it's interesting, I don't know when divinity and kingship got intertwined. I don't know the history of that. But I think it's interesting to consider, certainly the Torah divinely installs a king, right? Says, you have been chosen to be the king by a prophet, right? And then it is passed on through that family. So I don't know if there was such a thing before the Bible or not. I'm not sure. It would be interesting for me to know. But certainly the kings of Europe base their kingship and royalty and commoners, that kind of thing, comes from biblical stuff, right? It comes from who has the power to bestow kingship upon a family. Only God, really. And that's why the Magna Carta was actually interesting, because now that I'm saying this, I'm contradicting myself, because the Magna Carta said that why it was such an important document was said that even kings have a law that they have to respond to, and it's the law of God, right? So I guess if you're made king by God, you'd know that already. So anyway, the whole concept of being a king and knowing that it's not about you and it's not about your family and it's not about your dynasty, it's about how you use your power to manifest God on the planet, to be the channel of God's reign on earth.
Romans believed you could be elected God.
Interesting. Interesting. So that's the Sefirat HaOmer, is the ability to count through. Now, Sefirat HaOmer is a very special time because, as we mentioned last time, in Egypt, the Jews sank to the 49th level of Tumah. 49 is 7 times 7. So that's nature. 7 represents nature. That's nature times nature. Represents nature because there's 7 days in the week. 7 notes in the Western scales. So that's not really in nature. seven colors in the rainbow. There's lots of sevens within the Torah, but certainly in nature we have the 7 days of the week, which is only actually from the Torah. There's no natural cycle of 7 days of the week. Right? There's natural cycles of 28 or 29 days for months, and there's natural cycles of 365.4 days for years. There's nothing natural about a week except for the Torah. But the world was created in 7 days, so that's our natural cycle. And we see seven as nature, and we see eight as above nature, which is why we do a bris milah on the eighth day, right? When you're taking your soul in the realm of Shmona, which you can rearrange into neshama, those letters spell neshama too, and that's your above nature zone. So 50 is above nature, shebe nature, right? So if we would have sunk to the 50th level of Tumah, there would have been nothing left to redeem from Egypt. Which is, so 50 on the downside, extremely bad. 50 on the upside is the day that we got the Torah. So when we were taken, Shavuos, right? So when we were taken out of Mitzrayim, we were skipped, as we mentioned last time, we skipped over, that's what the why it's called Passover. One reason why it's called Passover, because we passed over all the prerequisites for redemption. We did not accomplish or deserve to be redeemed at that time. Hashem passed over the prerequisites and redeemed us on the promise. So he jumped us up from the 49th level of Tumah, jumped us really up to the 49th level of accomplishment so that we could then receive the Torah on level 50. So these days in between, these incubating days in between Exodus from Egypt and receiving the Torah are double healing days. They're a day for healing that 49th level of Tumah that's below us and accomplishing that one level step that's going up, because Hashem whisked us up to the top. So we have to both build the platform underneath that height that we've been brought to and repair the damage in the depths that we sank to.
Get out of the red.
Right. Get out of the red and move up in the black. Both at the same time. So each day repairs a level and builds a level.
Wow.
So we want to try to have that kavana if we can, that this day I'm repairing and building, each day repairing and building through these character traits. So if you have a chance to tear this off each day and say, today's the day of Tiferet Sheba Yesod, you could just, there is not a formula for how to behave on those days.
There's a book
that helps, for sure. There's two books. There's one by Simeon Jacobson, right?
Yeah, the little flip chart.
The flip chart book, that's the classic one. And there's also one by Yaakov Haber, Rabbi Yaakov Haber.
Haber.
H-A-B-E-R. And he's TorahLab.org, so you can find it on there. But he has a book. TorahLab, L-A-B
dot Rabbi org. Rabbi Goldfeder also did a book.
Goldfeder. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, he did. So there's three books out now that I know of.
What's that one?
Rabbi Goldfeder's book. I don't know the name of it. But
which one do you like the most?
I don't know. They're all suggestions. There is no established way to work with these. There are suggestions on how you might. They provide exercises or thoughts on how you might work with it. Okay, we're super late, but I don't want to skip the last days of Pesach. So the last days of Pesach are Pesach, unlike the last days of Sukkot, which are a different holiday. So it's always confusing, but just one practical point of halacha here. The last days of Sukkot, which are really a different holiday, we say Shechayanu when we light candles. The last days of Pesach, which are still Pesach, are the end of the same holiday we said Shechayanu for. The first days of Pesach, we do not say Shechayanu when we light Yantif candles, the last days of Pesach.
But the second day also not. Oh, yes.
The second night of the first days we say Shechayanu.
Yeah,
the last day on both nights, because they're one day.
Both seders.
But the last days we don't. Okay, so what's going on the last days? The last days of Pesach is when there was Kriyat Yam Suf. So that's when the sea split. And we walked through it. So we sing Az Yashir every day of the year. So it's not a special time to sing Az Yashir necessarily the seventh day of Pesach, because that was such an important experience that we actually remember it every single day. What's so important about it, right? So first thing, and I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but first thing is I printed out this sheet of paper, like Az Yashir is written in the Torah. Az Yashir is written differently than the rest of the columns in the Torah.
I didn't understand why.
So it's written similar to this. If you look at this, it can look like the sea splitting and the Jews walking through it.
Wow.
Right? That's what it looks like in the Torah, is a split sea with the Jews walking through. And not only that, but just look at, for anybody who reads Hebrew, just look at the very last line. I did copy the last line of the actual poem itself, exactly how it's written. And you'll notice that the last line has Hayam v'Hayam on each side, ocean and ocean on the sides. And the center is Uvnei Yisrael halchu b'yabasha b'toch. Right? It's gorgeous. And the children of Israel walked through on the dry land in between. So I want to point out two very important things here. The first is, it turns out the Jew has no place on earth. No matter what nation we're in, they kick us out. There's no place they want us, including in our own land, which is not actually our land, it's God's land. Right? The land of Israel plus the Jews plus the Torah of Israel together is supposed to create a synergy that shines a light into the world, that helps all human beings come into relationship with God. But it's not actually our land. We have to separate a little bit from the Zionist dream that said, Im tirtzu ein zo agada, right? You could have your own land and be normal like other people. No, that's not why we got the land of Israel. It is not to provide a refuge for the Jewish people. That's not it. It's so that we can do the mitzvahs of Hashem in that land. God's special people with God's special law and God's special land should create a magic synergy that allows the light to shine into the world.
That's now, revolutionary.
That being said, where does the Jew belong? And the answer is nowhere. There's not a spot on earth for God's special people, which is why he made a spot in the sea for us. Dry land in the sea where we're completely protected. Right? And where do the Arabs want to send us right now?
To the ocean, always they say.
To the sea. Always, right? Say. It's fascinating to think about that here. Here, the Yam was split for us. Not only was the ocean split for us, but it was dry. It wasn't even hard to walk through. It wasn't muddy. It was dry land. It was our spot. God said, they might chase you and chase you and chase you, but I will be there to catch you. That's what Shirat HaYam is about. Come into my arms and I'll catch you. And I'll make a special wall around you. And you'll be safe inside me. So that, and we experience that in the ocean when we were being chased, that we have this special relationship with God where we're held deep inside his cradling walls like that, that Hashem is the space in which we live. So that's number one, to know that the splitting of the sea was creating a place for us to live inside Hashem, really. I mean, the whole world's inside Hashem, but that's our special place, inside our special hug. And that's why we read it every single day, because we have a special place inside his special hug. But not just that. Now look back at the top, right, where I put the words in Hebrew, Zekeli v'anvehu. That's, we sang this song to God. We could point and say it, not to a thing, of course, but to the concept of, that is my God, and I will, now it often says, I will praise him, I'll glorify him, but anvehu, really the root is nave, which means a dwelling place. I will be his dwelling place, right? I will reciprocate. God made a space inside him for me to live. I will make a space inside me for God to live. I get it. That's my God. Kaylee, it's personal, right? E is personal. That's my God. And I'm going to create space inside me. That's what the seventh day of Pesach is about. That's what all of Pesach is about. That's what our cleaning is about. It's amazing we all got out of the house tonight, but we're all right now sweeping out our ego, sweeping out the chametz to make space for God to live inside us, for God to live inside our homes, for God to live inside our hearts. That's what we're up to right now. The physical sweeping and wiping and cleaning that we're doing is creating space spiritually for God to live inside us. Especially if we have intent that that's the case. But that's what it is. Mitzvahs are physical pathways to spiritual goals. So the physical cleaning for Pesach, mitzvahs are physical pathways to spiritual goals. So the physical pathway of getting ready for Pesach is the physical cleaning of the chametz out of our lives. And the spiritual goal that that leads to is the spiritual cleaning of ego out of our hearts so that there'll be space for Hashem to live inside us. Want to make space for Hashem. So he makes a special place for us. We make a special place for him. That's the message of Az Yashir. And that's what we're trying to do for Pesach. So you go, girls. I'll help you do the stapling, but that's the end for now, is that we should make that space and grow, 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 and help others grow around us.
That's so much.
Lovely.